This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now, there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in Three Body Problem. Mm. 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver 5 times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the seven-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare.
It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses.
You ready?
Go.
Okay, so we just got a vodka sauce in, Sundays with Joe. I already put it in the pan. We're going to try it. Now, this is our recipe. We sent it in like 3 times. It hasn't been perfect yet. Hopefully it is now. I didn't doctor it. Didn't put anything else on it. You got all this, right? How do I look? Do I look okay?
You look stunning, baby.
Beautiful?
Amazing. Just so handsome.
I really like it. I think it's really good.
Welcome to Game of Roses. This is Pace Case.
This is Bachelor Clues, and it's Friday, which usually means This Week of Bachelor Nation.
Gotta get down on Friday.
Yes.
Yes, it does. But why doesn't it mean that today, Clues? Should we tell them?
Because we have an interview prepared that is over an hour long with a fascinating guest who has a wide breadth of knowledge about reality television, pop culture, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we can't wait to present this interview to you for our Friday episode.
One of the widest breaths ever. What you guys are going to listen to is Clues finding a new best friend. Let's be real.
Something like that.
A new bestie for Clues. Maybe that'll be the title of this episode.
Maybe a new bestie for Clues. Well, maybe we'll call it that. Maybe we won't. But we hope that you guys enjoy this interview. We certainly did. And now we are proud to present it. Welcome to the pit.
And now we would like to welcome to the pit pop culture expert, host of Reality Life with Kate Casey podcast, Kate Casey.
Hi, how are you?
Welcome.
Hi, thank you for joining us.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. We already spoke yesterday and my episode's going to come out tomorrow and I'm so excited about it. great episode.
There was so much to cover. So much. And I was very excited to cover so much more on our podcast. I'm glad we're doing the swap this week.
Yeah. Nothing better than a good podcast swap.
I always say that.
What did I call you guys? My pod rad in arms. Pod rads in arms.
Exactly. All of us in this strange tier of podcasts where we're covering reality TV and The Bachelor and all this kind of stuff. I feel like there is this growing momentum. There are more and more of us doing this at a high level. So it's always fantastic to be able to talk to somebody else who's doing it. You have, Kate, right now, 58,000 followers on Instagram. Do you know where that puts you on the overall chart of Bachelor players, where you would rank?
Oh my God, it'd be so low, right? Because the JoJo Fletcher is like, what, 2 million or something?
You are number 186 on the big board.
Okay.
Between.
Not bad.
John Blanc from Bachelorette season 14.
Okay.
And Damar Jackson from Bachelorette season 16.
I don't know who those people are. And that, therefore, that's an issue.
You don't know.
Yeah.
Jean Blanc, the colonosaur?
No, maybe. Was he in Tayshia's season?
Season 14.
Oh, forgot it. No way. There were a couple seasons I dipped out. Emily Maynard, Juan Pablo, Ben Flojnik. I didn't watch those. But I knew what was going on, but I didn't like sit down and watch every season. I started with season one and then I dipped out. Jason Mesnick, when it was suggested in Us Weekly that he was not actually a real estate agent, but selling cell phones at a mall kiosk, whether or not that's true, I read it and I just thought, I don't know what's going on with this show. So I dipped out for a second, but then I came back. And I think it was because there was like a lull in other shows for a hot minute. I was like, there's enough fodder right here. So maybe I'll come back.
Well, you definitely have to watch season 16. That's Ben Flanick. That had Courtney Robertson wins that season. Spoiler alert. She was a villain the entire season, openly talking about gameplay and how she's trying to fuck over the other players in her ITMs. Yeah. And then she successfully did it. She just destroyed them all. It was really a unique season. I don't think we'll ever see anything like that again.
Oh, but he was, how do I say this kindly? He seemed to me like somebody who was surprised when they said, do you want to be the Bachelor? Like, he was like, wait, what? Like, okay. Mm-hmm. Like, he seems like somebody that is like a carpet salesman in Albuquerque and somehow ended up on TV.
So we now know that you think people who sell carpets and cell phones are the worst kind of people.
Well, they're not like people that you would assume would be like television stars, right?
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
They're like too normal. That's the thing. I'm like, if you're too normal, do you have a place on a show like this? I don't know if you do.
They both had huge heartbreak edits, though.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like Ben Flanick got down on his knee to propose and was rejected mid-proposal.
But then I remember reading that like he went on a date with Kris Jenner and I thought he's living his best life. Like he doesn't need this stupid show.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that.
Uh-huh.
They went on like two or three dates. And then he appeared on an episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians because they flew to the vineyard where he worked. Listen, if you're on a text basis with Kris Jenner, who's a huge Bachelor fan, you're fine, man. You're fine. You've done something right.
Yeah, you've done something right. He went from carpet sales to living with American royalty.
Well, let's back up. Let's back up a little bit. Kate, where did you grow up?
I'm from suburban Philadelphia, a town called Westchester. I went to boarding school in Hershey, Pennsylvania at a school called the Milton Hershey School, which is a school created by Milton Hershey for underprivileged children. You have to live below the poverty line and have come from like a single parent or orphaned family. He started the school because he didn't have any children and all of his relatives had died. So he and his wife, who tried desperately to have kids, had this massive fortune. His wife died. And then he was left with what is now an upwards of almost $20 billion fortune. So I went to school for high school. And I like to think that's part of the reason I've always been fascinated by people's stories. Not only growing up in a wacky home with weird personalities, but then being at the front seat of some of the most extraordinary personal stories I've ever heard at the Milton Hershey School. I thought that I would go into politics. I went to school in Washington, D.C., and I, you know, worked a couple of different internships, including the White House. I got a degree in political science, but ended up working representing law firms as a media consultant and had my own firm and did that for a long time. And I always had this harboring secret dream to work in the entertainment industry. I started to have children and my husband's best friend said, you really have to write. So I started taking improv comedy classes and started what was like a blog, which no one reads blogs anymore, recapping television episodes of reality TV, which I think began with Real Housewives of Orange County. So I got a following from that. And then from there, I thought this idea of creating a podcast that was all about reality television, because I have a photographic memory. I can remember details about people. And so once I watch something, that person stays with me. And I often want to find out what happened to them years and years after. So my idea, which I pitched to a network, was I want to track down people that have been on reality shows and see how it changed the course of their life. People like the first season of The Real World, for example.
Great idea. Love it.
And at the time, which was 5.5 years ago, they said to me, we're concerned not enough people watch reality television. And I said, you're out of your mind. And that is hilarious to our earlier point on how many podcasts now are just about reality television.
Yes.
There's such a hunger for those stories. And I think over time, people have become a little bit more willing to advertise that they watch reality shows. But for a good period of time, people would say, I'm too cerebral for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a dirty secret.
It's like a dirty secret, but I've always looked at reality shows and I put that under the unscripted umbrella. Mm-hmm. So reality shows, docuseries, documentaries, real people, real stories. And you know, you could watch This Is Us and then the season ends and you'd think to yourself, I love those characters. The great thing about unscripted is like you can continue to keep up with those people and who they are in the world, because certainly who they are now will be completely different than 2, 5, 10 years from now.
Yeah.
But I also look at all these shows as like a cultural anthropologist. So
yes, me too.
Mm-hmm. I'm always thinking about like, what does this say about this person and the lens through which they look at life? And I love nothing more than feeling like I get a peek into someone else's world in another part of the world, or I don't know, maybe even in my own county, Orange County. I just like to see what makes people tick. And I think that this platform is an incredible opportunity to tell really insightful stories. And for the person that says, I don't have time to watch reality TV, you can go fuck yourself, because I have 5 children and I can make that dream happen. But also somebody's like somebody just said to me the other week, you know, how can you watch that? And I'm like, do you watch war movies? Yeah. Did you watch American Sniper? Oh, I loved it. It was my favorite. Like, you wanted to watch somebody having a drill go into their head? That doesn't seem perverse, but watching somebody on Shaws of Sunset take you to the border of Turkey and tell you their experience, how their relatives were left but to leave Iran. And now you get to learn about their customs, their culture, et cetera. Like, that to me is a really incredible thing. So I love to be part of this world, and every day I love to talk to people who create these shows and who are on these shows.
What was it about Real Housewives of OC that made you like pull the trigger and finally start the blog?
I was eating at a Greek restaurant and there was a city paper and I opened it and there was an interview with the 5 women. It was yet to air. And it said, this is going to be a new show set in Orange County and it's going to go behind the scenes of the gates of Coda do Casa. And I remember this one woman who's in the show named Vicky Gombleson. The reporter pointed out that she was speaking for all of them and kind of telling them what to do and what to say. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. Like, there's this group of friends, they live in suburbia. One is telling the others what to do. I'm like, that sounds familiar to my mom and her friends and people that I knew. So I tuned into that for the story, but also because I just moved to Orange County, because I'd first moved to LA. And then I met my husband and he started a software company. So we moved to Orange County. So I was just like, I moved here. I can't really explain to people how weird this place is, but now there's a show that can kind of showcase it.
Well, wasn't also The Real Housewives, the entire franchise was spawned off of a scripted show, Desperate Housewives, right? The idea of these bored housewives living in little communities where it is groups of friends. That was a scripted, what was then an hour-long dramedy for ABC, I believe. And it was a massive hit. And then Bravo came along and was just like, let's just do that for real. Yeah. A million times in a million different cities and create this giant empire.
Create perfect content.
Mm-hmm. To your earlier point too, about people saying, oh, how can you watch that? In terms of like viewing reality television as some kind of just like bullshit, meaningless kind of junk media. I think that that is an antiquated attitude. And I think you don't see that attitude in younger generations.
No.
Specifically because we watch everything on our phones now. And it's just like, if something's on a screen, it is content. That is it. That is all. There is no hierarchy of like, well, that's good content and worth my time, and that's not. It's like, if you're entertained by it or informed by it, it doesn't matter what the format is, who's making it, how it's made. It's just, does it hold your attention on a screen? And that's all that matters.
I also think that there's a huge segment of the population that is hungry for stories that are about people they know, right? So in scripted television for so long, you would never see a woman over 40 years old. Most certainly not a woman who has a bunch of kids. And the idea of getting a peek into the world of a woman who may work in an insurance office and her boss is an absolute bitch, and she took the job because her husband divorced her because he was a cheating asshole, and now she has to make income to pay for her two bratty kids, and in the process meets this really wealthy guy, and now she gets married, and now she's more wealthy than the woman who was the bitch boss. It's like, you can't write that shit. You cannot write that. And so there's that, and also the relatability. Like, okay, I can see someone's life unraveling. For example, in Real Housewives, you see so many couples that divorce over the course of the show because they probably had a lot of problems before, and then it's magnified on television. And I think a lot of people are kind of caught in their own world.
Their indiscretions get revealed.
And there's
always,
always. But also, I think people are privately, people are struggling in their own circumstances, and they think either I relate to that and I'm going to navigate my own life while watching this person's experience because they can make the mistakes that maybe I don't want to make. But also, I need some relief from my shitty job or my jerk in-laws. And this gives me the space to just check out for a little bit and then come back and recharge my battery.
Yeah. Or my boyfriend is shitty, but at least he didn't fake cancer.
Totally. Absolutely.
I also think it's the nature of how media has changed, especially in the last like 5 or so years, really with the rise of like streaming and Netflix and all the different streaming services. But they're not just shows anymore. None of this stuff is. Bachelor, Housewives, whatever. These are worlds unto themselves. They're giant media brands that people who watch the shows don't just watch the show. You're following everybody on social media. You're watching all the other shows. You're watching the, like Andy Cohen, Watch What Happens Live. You're watching the recap shows. You're reading it about it in Us Weekly and People. So there's this entire world built around it in the same way that you have like a Marvel franchise or a Star Wars or a Fast and Furious. These reality franchises now have that as well. These worlds that you can inhabit if you're a part of it. And with the metaverse coming very soon, we'll all be virtually in these. You'll be sitting in the rooms with the housewives. You'll be at the rose ceremony, standing on the risers. I cannot wait for that shit. But before we get to the metaverse, we had to go through media of a prior era. So I want to ask you this question. You're obviously well-versed in contemporary pop culture. You're writing about it constantly, doing all these podcasts. What did you watch when you were growing up as a little kid?
Wonder Years, because Fred Savage was living a parallel life. He had his first kiss the same week that I did. He had a brother that was kind of a jackass. My sister was a gigantic bitch to me. It was just like, oh my God, Fred Savage, I get it. And by the way, he's still like somebody I find incredibly funny, inspirational, and like a great storyteller.
I agree. He's a fantastic director now.
He's amazing. So I feel like I watch a lot of episodic television, sitcoms. Same. I could sing to you many theme songs. I watched a prodigious amount of television because my mom wasn't really hands-on. So, I mean, I can recall crazy stuff because I watched so much television. I also watched a lot of soap operas. Like General Hospital.
I watched that with my mom every summer.
I would come home watching that. And I would be like, Mom, what's the story with Luke and Laura? And she's like, he raped her. I'm like, that was the house that I kind of grew up in. So there's that. But then I also have that memory thing where I remember everybody's stories. So, and I watched a lot of MTV.
Same.
I watched a ton of videos. And I loved The Real World. I came home for like a weekend from school, from boarding school, and they had a reunion a marathon of The Real World. And I did not leave the television. I was like, what? I want to know who Eric and Julie are and what town did they grow up in and how many siblings did they have and what do their parents do and who are their friends in high school and what kind of job do they want to have and are they going to keep in touch afterward? Like, that's the shit that would run through my brain when all the other kids were like, let's go play hopscotch or whatever. I don't know.
Whatever they were doing. outside.
And I always loved People magazine, and I loved to filter through, and I could remember the names of people's children. And then it's funny, when I worked in LA, I was working in the corporate office of corporate division of a communications firm called Magnet Communications. And my friend Nikki worked next to me, and she was running the entertainment department. And she would be like, God, what is the name of like Kelsey Grammer's production company? I'd be like, Gramnet Productions. Like, I just would remember stupid information. And so I just think that that's the beauty of all these, like the things that you watch, is that if you pay attention enough, things will crop up. And I think it's a great, like, just conversation starter. If that's a great question, for example, like anybody, like, what did you watch as a kid? And then you find that the person across the table from you, you thought you had nothing in common with, like, also watch The Wonder Years.
No, I mean, all the stuff that you're saying, like being able to sing the sitcom songs and stuff from the 80s and the 90s, like, you know, what was fucking Family Ties? What would we do, baby, with our love? Us. All that shit is in my head, too. And I watched it constantly. My parents were very hands-on, but they also watched TV constantly. Yeah. It was like what we did as a family. It was HBO. Yeah. It was all those sitcoms.
Totally.
It was definitely The Wonder Years. I watched every fucking episode of that. I know the exact episode you're talking about, when he kisses Winnie Cooper. And of course, Real World. And what you're saying about when you're pitching your show and people are like, do people watch reality TV or want to know about what happened to these people? It's like, now Paramount Plus has the show where they bring back everybody from season one to shoot a new season.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, sometimes part of me is like, yeah, I interviewed Eric Nice 5 years ago, people. Like, hello. Wait, do you remember the show on HBO called It Was Not Necessarily the News?
I loved it. It had a segment in it called Sniglets, which I owned every book of. Yes, it was Rich Hall wrote
Rich
those
Hall,
books.
Hilarious.
Hilarious comedian from the 80s. And he would create words that didn't exist. And then they would print those, all the words that he made for this. Not Necessarily the News. It was like a fake news show. And it was kind of like ahead of its time. It's maybe a little bit like a John Oliver type show, but it was like all comedy.
Do you remember, and I think about this every time I pass a gas station, SOASO? That was a person that, instead of waiting at the stoplight with the four, they cut through a gas station and then turn right on the highway. It's called an SOASO. I still think about that to this day. Chad, where have you been all my life? Were we separated at birth?
It could be. I mean, but I always find it interesting when you talk to somebody like this, like we have essentially an identical media upbringing, and now we're doing something very similar as a job.
Yeah. I feel like I'm seeing the formation of a dynamic duo right now.
And can I tell you something? I'm a horrible parent, and here's why. My kids, my two oldest, are media consumers, and I don't have a problem with it, because I'm like, you guys, this will allow you to have street cred wherever you go. You can talk about anything with anybody. And I was explaining on my Patreon the other day that with the Ukraine stuff, I was, you know, I sat the kids down like, do you understand what's going on in the world? And they were like, yeah, dipshit. My mom, or my mom, my daughter, I just said my mom because my daughter's name is Mia. Mia is on TikTok and she follows all these Ukrainians that like that have accounts. And she said, oh yeah, not your bay boy was just posted the other day. She was in the basement crying because of the gunshots, but now she's headed out to the border.
Oh my God.
She just posted. I was like, what? So she shows me, and then you scroll through the comments and all these little, you know, like teenagers are like, we stand with you. They change their profiles. And I thought, that is exactly why media is so important, because otherwise kids across the world wouldn't be able to connect in that same way. And I feel like we didn't have that luxury, but we had TV. So no matter where we went, we could talk about, like, maybe it wasn't a TV show, but like the Whitney Houston video or AHA's Take on Me, something that like we had someone to connect with.
Totally. Michael Jackson's Thriller was event television in the 80s. They would tell you, we are going to play this video Friday night at midnight, and you would fucking be home to watch that shit. Like, you were not missing it.
Oh, yeah. And can't leave the room. You can't leave the room. Don't go to the bathroom. My sister and I'd be like, do not go to the bathroom, because you're going to miss this.
That is stressful.
I definitely had like habitual viewing protocols.
Yes.
That were like every Friday night, I was watching the top 20 music video countdown. Yes. Every Saturday night was Saturday Night Live. And then whatever was on HBO after that.
Who's your favorite SNL?
It's probably Dana Carvey. I really loved what he did. And I thought he was a funny... No, probably Phil Hartman.
Yeah.
The Turtle?
Yeah, The Turtle. That was his best work. No, that movie is not... Come on. Or he wasn't The Turtle, though. That was in The Man of Many Faces or whatever. I forget the name of that movie.
Have you ever read the book The Chris Farley Show?
No.
Oh my God, get that. Anybody who's listening, please get that. It is, he died at 33. It's so sad. Same age as John Belushi, by the way. But that book, you have such a window into what a sweet, kind person, and the stories that everybody tells, you will laugh out loud and then you will cry and then you will laugh out loud again. You're going to love that book, The Chris Farley Show. I know you will.
I'll check it out for sure. I mean, he was one of my favorites too, obviously.
Gilda Radner is my favorite. Gilda Radner is like hero.
Oh, yeah. She's amazing. There's just so many people who have gone through that. And every once in a while, I'll have some cause to meet one of them. Like I met Jane Curtin a while back because a friend was in a pilot with her. And I was at the taping of it. And it was just like, I'm meeting like a legend, a fucking living legend. It's absolutely incredible, especially how much they shaped really what modern comedy became and especially what it was in that era. But in terms of like letting your kids watch media and stuff, as I said, my parents definitely let me watch whatever I wanted. There was no restriction. Like I could watch rated R movies or whatever. Yeah. And I think, especially as an adult, something I've become acutely aware of that maybe I didn't quite understand when I was watching it as a kid, is that it was a reflection of our society in those times. Like just take Family Ties, which we discussed here briefly when we were singing the song to each other. That show was about two kind of like
hippies,
hippie, liberal, artsy kind of parents who had a son that was a young Republican, Michael J. Fox, AKA Alex P. Keaton. And that whole show was about really the changing of the guard in America and what the youth generation, what it was about politically, what it was about socially. And it was right wing young Republicans standing up to the hippie parents of the 60s. And that was like a massive hit TV show. And so I think even just as one example, but there are many, many other examples that you can look at in all eras of television and media. But I think the more of that you can absorb, even if you're not aware of it, it's teaching you about what society is. And especially looking at like what shows are very popular, what are hit shows, those are the best reflections because people see themselves in it. That's why we watch that stuff. And so in my mind, it's like intaking media in whatever form you can, television shows, movies, music, books, video games, TikTok, whatever. It's all the same. It's all just a mirror reflecting back at us who we are. So I think it's invaluable.
You also can't really stop it unless you're like homeschooling your kids in a forest.
Oh, and who wants to do that? I mean, God knows I don't want to. I also loved on Family Ties that Mallory was a dingbat. So you had the brother who was like super into politics. And I'm like, that is every family in America. You could have like one kid that's like, what do you mean you didn't read Newsweek? And then you have another one that's like, wait, what?
And then the younger daughter, the Tina Yeller's character was not, she was just kind of there. They always, I felt like, had trouble figuring out who her character was going to be. But do you remember Scott Valentine, the guy who played Mallory's?
Oh, of course. Yeah, he was a heartthrob.
Did you ever see the movie he did called My Demon Lover?
No.
Okay. I just wanted to see how far down the hole you went.
Did you ever watch The Boy Who Could Fly?
Fuck yeah.
Chad's now making these facts up just to test you.
No, how dare you? My Demon Lover was great. Okay.
The Boy Who Could Fly still to this day makes me cry my face off.
I definitely remember The Boy Who Could Fly. My Demon Lover was...
I'm going to watch that.
It was not as serious as The Boy Who Could Fly. It was a rom-com about Scott Valentine plays this kid who gets caught making out with a girl in his teenage years. The mom comes in. The mom puts a curse on him that whenever he gets aroused, he becomes a literal demon. And so the whole movie is him trying to remove this curse because he's fallen in love with somebody and he can't let her see him as a demon.
Did you ever watch after school specials?
Of course.
There was this one after school special and it was from a book that I bought on eBay. I believe it's a Canadian book. It's from a library. It has like, you know, the number on the, you know, the binder, whatever. So it was the story about this boy and this girl that meet at school. And they fall in love. And then he finds out that the girl that he's fallen in love with, his mom, who's a drunk, killed her sister while she was riding her bike. And when the mom was drinking, she was a drunk driver. And so there's this whole issue that her parents are like, you cannot date him. His mom killed your sister. And then they would send the mom every year on the girl's birthday a black rose, like a dying
Holy
rose.
Holy shit. That's intense.
And in retrospect, I was like, I watched that shit when I was like, I don't know, fifth grade?
Yeah.
Like, wow, what a doozy.
Shit was different back then. I remember watching Watership Down, which is an animated show or an animated movie based on this book.
Was that about rabbits? I read that book.
But it's terrifying. It's terrifying. The rabbits are fighting, killing each other. One of them is having like constant LSD nightmares. It's like, it's bananas. Yeah. And you're just like a 5-10-year-old kid being like, let's watch cartoons. And that's what they're showing you. Hell on earth through a rabbit's eyes.
Wow. That's why we have thick skin.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. It was a different era.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm always curious to know what people watch growing up, because I do think, like I said, it informs who you become as an adult, obviously.
And I think it is a great connector. Like what you were saying, it made me realize I was in a sorority in college, and during Rush, we were supposed to ask like all these questions that would like get at their leadership qualities or like what community service have they done? And I was like, I'm not doing any of that. I just asked people what TV they watched.
I think that's brilliant.
I had a great time.
Yeah.
I have two half sisters, and one's 10 years older than me and one's 4 years younger than me. So I also felt like I watched so many sitcoms that were like, I would watch Eight Is Enough reruns. Like that was a whole decade before me. But I felt like I had working knowledge of that. And then I like my younger sister watched other shows, so I could hang.
I did the exact same thing when like things like Petticoat Junction or even The Monkees, they aired that on Nickelodeon, I think.
I watched The Monkees too. That was awesome. They did. Here we come.
Walking down the street.
Got the funniest looks from everyone.
Everyone we meet. Yeah, that was a great show. I have a similar kind of like retention ability with all media. Anything that I watch is kind of like just in my head now forever. That's the way it is, I suppose. So this is what you watched as a child. Mm-hmm. Now we are in the era of social media.
Yeah.
What was your first interaction with social media? And like when you got on Instagram, what was that like?
I feel like the first ones things that I post on Instagram were of my kids. And there were only like a few of my friends that were on Instagram. And then I noticed that because my daughter was quite young, that there was this whole other world of mom Instagram influencers that I would watch from afar. I mean, I'm kind of like adjacent to them because I know people in that space. So for me, that was like another almost like an extension of reality television, watching the Instagram influencer world. And I'm glad that Nick Bilton created that HBO documentary, Fake Famous, which I think really perfectly illustrates the bananery of it. Bananery is my word for things that are bananas and you cannot explain them otherwise. But I feel like I just remember thinking, oh my God, for Instagram specific, this is ridiculous. Like the lies that go on, like somebody who just posts a picture of a coffee table, like a book on a coffee table, like clearly 3,000 people did not like that picture. Like there's just no way possible. So I do think that that has been a great thing about social media is it's just an extension of this unscripted world. And like all of these accounts that people have are like their own channels, really. And so you get a window into how someone's world is. And some people are more honest than others. And I think that it kind of ebbs and flows, right? Like I think that generation, like the millennials were much more about posting pictures that were vapid and self-serving and bikinis and that kind of thing. And then I'm noticing that Generation Z is much more about authenticity and like, we're going to show you our cellulite and our like our roles and that we live in a disgusting, shitty room. And they embrace authenticity and honesty in a way that millennials didn't. And then what is it, Generation Alpha is going to be completely different.
Exactly. Nobody's doing anything real in there.
It's interesting watching how it kind of ebbs and flows, you know?
I think Gen Alpha and some of Gen Z, I think we're fast approaching a time where there will be nothing authentic in social media because we will all have the ability to do very realistic deep fakes and whatever kind of avatars and shit like that we want. And the possible detriment of posting something authentic that enough people don't like that you get called out for and it fucking drops your follower count or gets you in some kind of trouble. I think that threat is going to make people not ever want to post anything with themselves again. I think everyone will have a fake persona that they use specifically for all of their online interactions.
I do hate the way that social media, though, does dictate how much power someone has. Like, I've been told so many times, like, if you had 1 million followers, you would have this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most people don't want to game the system and buy followers. They want someone to value the work that they do. Sure. And I see even in reality stars that I interview, a lot of them I've interviewed have said, well, I did this show because I wanted to be an actor or I want to be a singer, but I'm always asked about how many followers I have. So they basically use it, and much like the Bachelor contestants, as an escalator to success. Like, instead of doing the grind, mm-hmm. I'll just go on the show. It'll get me that. So I have enough power to do the next opportunity. And that I totally. Hate. That I hate. You know, some substitute teacher went on The Bachelor, was kicked off 2 weeks later. And now she's like, you know, I've got a multi-level marketing company called Pancakes, Waffles, and Bracelets, and you can all join it. And you're like, wait, what? What? How did that happen?
But getting into The Bachelor is a difficult process in and of itself. That's not nothing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
10,000 people, I mean, at least for Bachelor, roughly. I don't know what the actual stats were this year. It seems like it might be tapering off a little bit, but roughly 10,000 people apply to get in that show. 30 make it. That's not great odds.
I don't know if I told you this, but I went 1 year to the auditions in Costa Mesa.
Oh, wow.
What's interesting about this is I pretended I wanted to be a contestant even though I was married, but I brought two of my children and then another one and a baby Bjorn. And I stood in line just to see how people would react. And it was my observation was that they were all either between like 18 and 22. And then there was a lull. And then you'd see like a 32-year-old in a jumpsuit who you could tell, like, you know, had lived some life. You know what I mean? And then.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Clues. A Mother's Day is coming up.
That's true.
You know, that's one of the most important holidays. We got to honor our mothers. They all went through a lot to get us here into this planet. And the gifts for Mother's Day, they can be a little predictable and boring. Sweaters, candles, the dreaded bathrobe. You only need one bathrobe, in my opinion. That's why Aura Frames is the perfect gift to mix things up this year. Named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter, Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
Aura Frames are Wi-Fi connected. They come with unlimited storage. You can share as many photos as you want from your phone to your mom's frame. Not only is she going to be grateful that it's not just another sweater for Mother's Day, she's also going to love that an Aura frame means she gets to see more of you.
Or in my case, she gets to see more of my cat, Skaboolian. My mom loves seeing him rolling around, playing with his toys, doing whatever, and I can upload as many images of him as I want every day, and my mom gets to see them in her Aura frame and then text me about it for all the rest of the day.
Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Everybody listening to Game of Roses can save on that perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code ROSES at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Clues, have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered
Hell yes.
why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised?
Hell yes. Well, unfiltered mineral water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And about 75% of the United States uses hard water filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine.
I thought it was 85%. And that's where Canopy's new filtered showerhead comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered showerhead. Dermatologists recommended unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin.
Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free. Installation's a breeze, and it's unique. Quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market.
Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription.
Even better, anybody listening to Gore right now can use code ROSES at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
They were all, they kind of looked similar. I mean, this, I think it's changed, of course, over the last couple seasons, but I just remember thinking, like, there is a template here, right? So I could see how in your line of work, how it can be really fascinating and all the whole algorithm to it, because I did witness that. There was like the same kind of woman trying out.
Did you do the interviews?
I just know, I was just like chatting with I had my babysitter at the time because I'm ridiculous, videotape it. But I was just like standing in line and I had my daughter Hayes and Bibjorn and the two kids behind, and the two kids behind were like, come on, mom, can we go? I'm like, no, I just want to see if this dream happens for me. And they were all like, oh my God, like what is happening here? And the people that work there, they were like, huh? They were so confused. It was pretty funny.
Oh my God.
This is making me think that we need to do a road trip to one of these.
Oh, for sure. You got to. You have to.
Whenever they start up again? They haven't done them during the pandemic, right?
Well, it's probably all Zoom now, right? But I feel like it is essential for them to meet in person, because a girl could do the whole filter thing and then you see them in person and you're like,
oh yeah.
You know, I don't know. You know what is nice though? I do feel like maybe they're a little bit more willing to accept a girl that's maybe like a size 4. And by the way, this is a ridiculous conversation, but for the sake of TV, like, I feel like in the beginning, you had to have a for sure hot tub body. Mm-hmm. You had to have a size 0 pec bikini body. And it does seem...
Yeah, Mike Fleiss says that on camera during, what was it, season 2 or 3?
Season 2.
He says, you gotta look good in a bikini in a hot tub.
Now I feel like, you know, there are a lot more shapes that they're kind of open to. Maybe not all the way, but like maybe we're getting somewhere, right?
Well, I can tell you this, in the Zoom interviews, one part of them, they make players stand up, step back from the camera and do a full spin around so they can look at their body.
Yeah.
Fun.
Sounds like University of Maryland sorority, where they circle your fat and make you stand on like a pedestal, right? A little bit.
I don't know. Never went to University of Maryland.
I want to go back to something we touched on briefly when we went on your show, which was you interning at the White House. This was when you were trying to pursue a political career, and you were there during a very famous intern White House time, correct?
Yes, I got a job in the lower press office. And I only think I got the job because I went to school in D.C. So most interns want to be there, obviously, during the summer when it's like fun to be in D.C., not in the cold. So my job was to do, there's the upper press office is like, you know, World News Tonight, 60 Minutes, et cetera. Lower press is like regional papers. So they kicked down the worst job to a specific intern. And that intern had to be me at that time, which was come to the old executive building at 5:30, rummage your way through stacks and stacks of newspapers and find for us all the articles about what's going on with the administration. And I had to cut it out and to make copies. And if they were smudged at all, I'd have to redo it. It was the dumbest process. Jeez. And you could easily do this just by like, you know, some computer, like software system now.
You would deliver these to who and for what purpose?
So then I would compile them and be like this massive stack. And like, just so that they get into their office and it's like, okay, what do the people like at Los Angeles Times think of our Department of Education policy or whatever? So I would have to walk through the old executive building with my little badge. And then I would go into the West Wing and then go to each desk and drop off the clips before they got to the office. And so what is crazy is while I was an intern, the Monica Lewinsky story started to unravel. And so I felt like I was living this parallel life to her, because also not only was I a student and an intern, but I also waited tables at Tony and Joe's on the waterfront. So I was working right near the Watergate building where Monica and her mom lived. And I would often go to this one restaurant, which was across the street from another restaurant that she went to. Like, there were so many parallels. And so whenever I read anything about the Monica Lewinsky case or when I watch the Ryan Murphy series, I'm just like, oh my God, it's like the fact that I'm not friends with her is crazy. She went on a date with Jake Tapper at the restaurant I worked, one of the restaurants I worked at in college. It was crazy. But yeah, that was a weird time. What was the craziest about it was that there were all these stories, obviously, how she would go into the West Wing and, like, I guess give him a blowjob.
Allegedly.
And I was not naive, and I mentioned this to you, not naive to the fact that people had affairs. Like, I got that. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I just thought, there's no way that could have happened, because I always felt like, even in the morning when I was dropping those clips off, I felt like I was being watched all the time. So I just couldn't wrap that around my brain. Like, how could an intern like myself go and even go anywhere private with the president? Because there, first of all, there's someone outside of his office all the time. There's a guard.
But those guards are setting it up. They're in on it.
Yeah, I didn't get it then because I was a dumbass.
House of Cards hadn't come out yet.
Yeah, I was like, what?
I'm
like,
didn't know how it was possible.
It's like, Mom, there's just no way. My mom's like, Katie, yeah, trust me. There's a way. When there's a will, there's a way.
Absolutely.
When there's a Willie, there's a way.
I know.
Hey.
But I asked her to be my 400th guest and she ignored me. I feel like confident that at some point. Maybe I'll walk past her at a restaurant.
Maybe this will be the interview that does it.
Yeah. She'll listen to this and be like, now I got to get on there.
She's in the pit.
Well, my friend Shanann writes for Toronto Star. And when that series came out, he wrote an article called The Other White House Intern. And he asked me like what I thought of the series. And I thought, for sure. And Sarah Paulson commented on it, but I couldn't get to Monica.
No, there's still time.
Oh, wait. I left one part out. So then after that, I get asked to speak at this Democratic Congressional Caucus meeting. They needed a kid to talk about saving student loans and Pell Grants. So I was like a junior in college. I go, it's filmed for C-SPAN, like Sam Donaldson's in the back of the room. I sit next to Ted Kennedy. This is crazy too. My mom's crying her face off in the front row because, like, she's like a Kennedy Democrat. So it's Ted Kennedy sitting next to me. Nancy Pelosi, who's an alum of my college, is like across the hall. And I introduced Vice President Gore. And then the president spoke. And so I was like sitting in the front row. And so I was so excited. I'm like, this is such a big moment for me in my life. The next day, the Washington Post wrote, a young girl around the age of Monica Lewinsky spoke about saving student loans. I was like,
really? That's insane.
So I just feel like she owes it to me.
She stole your thunder in that article for sure.
She sure did.
Wow.
She sure
That's
did.
Incredible. Well, let me ask you this question about just reality television, pop culture, whatever. You know, in the past few years, there's been a drastic change in how we consume media, how much of it is produced, how we access it, all these things. What do you think is like the future of not just reality TV, but media generally? Where do you think we're headed with this?
Well, I think the people in the short term are far less interested in shows like Real Housewives. I think that there are certain shows like that and The Bachelor that are becoming quite stale. And I think the burden is on those producers and those networks to come up with really fresh new content. And I just don't think that's fresh anymore. And I think that's why you see things like Love is Blind explode. I also think that there is a huge interest now in docuseries and documentaries because I think people are hungry for more real stories, stories of tenacity, hard work, grit. And that to see somebody who has a smoke and mirror lifestyle with a luxury car that we know is on lease and a husband that hates their wife and hair extensions, like, I think those days are kind of over, or at least for the short term, where people want something new and different. So I think you'll see much more interest in more authentic, sometimes even more painful storytelling. True crime is, there's an explosion of interest in true crime. Those kind of stories.
Do you know the documentary maker iDubbbz on YouTube?
I don't think I do.
He's got, I believe, 8 million subscribers and all of his videos regularly get tens of millions of views. And what he primarily does is he'll find some kind of niche celebrity or some kind of weird subculture in the internet. Yeah. And he'll do a documentary specifically about that person or that thing or whatever. And because it's all online pretty much, I mean, he does other people too, but primarily he's talking about like online movements or celebrities. They get massive views. And so I think that like a move, really we're seeing like the the fragmentation of all media, mm-hmm. where you can have now an audience of like a million people on network TV, for example. That's like not bad. You know, we're tracking some of the ratings and stuff. And yeah. it's like, as there are just more ways to get media and docuseries and whatever you may be into, I think we are losing the ability to have like a hit TV show. Like, I don't think a Game of Thrones will ever happen again, where you're getting like 80 million people watching a fucking one episode of a TV show.
Or like the shows of the past, like, I don't know, like a Real Housewives. If you have like a major, like great episode, maybe you get 750,000 viewers. Compare that to like what you would get in like The Bachelor in its heyday. Compare that to Netflix has like 95 million subscribers. You're in the top 10 of Netflix trending, you know, choices on Netflix. Like the cable channel cannot anyway compete with the streaming networks. So that's a big issue. And so the cable channels that create their own streaming networks, they have to compete also with the ones that have been already around for a couple of years, like Netflix. So let's say a Peacock, the burden is on them to get as many subscribers as Netflix. That's a huge uphill battle and a lot of money. And I don't know how many of those new streaming networks can compete with, you know, some of these others. Like Hulu has like what, 75 million subscribers? Like, it's insane.
The first ones to the party were definitely the massive beneficiaries, I feel like. Because yeah. Even now, like, I feel like most people are just fucking tapped out. I have my Netflix, I have my Hulu, yeah. I got mm-hmm. my Disney Plus, I got my mm-hmm. Amazon Prime, I got my YouTube TV. I'm probably missing one in there, HBO Max. And that's it. There's stuff on Paramount Plus that I want to watch. I refuse to do it.
Well, you could watch a lot. You could watch stuff on Paramount Plus through Amazon Prime. You can watch some stuff through other apps. It's kind of, there's just way to maneuver the system. But I also think that we're all just going to become our own streaming networks at some point, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I talk about this constantly. That in the very near future, I think, especially with the advent of quantum computing and AI, we're going to be able to just ask our phones or whatever device to create media for us. Yeah. Like, I want to see a new season of Game of Thrones starring Will Smith and whoever else I like, and it will just create it for you. Yeah. And that'll be that. I don't think people will make media for much longer, maybe 10 or 15 years. And then it'll just become like, in terms of profit, imagine if Netflix has an overhead in terms of production budgets for their stuff of $0. I think they're going to do that.
The good thing about that too is you can weed out the shitty content, and like sometimes there's too much, and then the good stuff kind of doesn't bubble to the top.
Well, there's just too much good stuff too. The problem of volume ultimately is that it creates so much good stuff that you can't fucking watch it all. So you're going to miss some good stuff. And now there's so much stuff, like we were talking about, you know, you want an hour long documentary about this or about this. There's a documentary about everything you can possibly fucking imagine. Any small, strange, specific taste you may have in media is now catered to with dozens, if not hundreds of hours of that exact content. So when you're trying to get me to watch like a network sitcom at this point, never. I'll never laugh at one of those again. Because in terms of what I find funny and what I think most contemporary media consumers find funny, it's all online. It's like meme culture and little funny short videos and stuff. That can make me laugh. A scripted network half hour is like paint drying. It's terrible now.
No, God, no. Hasn't for a long time.
Except for The Good Place.
Right. Except for that.
And Bad Judge.
And Bad Judge. Those were the two last funny shows. Yeah. Oh,
no, without question. Without question.
Of course.
I started this must watch list every week, and it you get it every Monday in your email, but I post it on all my socials, and I'm calling all the best stuff from all these different networks to help people navigate that, because I think that's the burden also of the consumer, is that there's so much stuff out there. Like, how do you find the really good stuff? So it's my hope that more people will check those lists out, because I really want to save people time. And also bringing people together, like people who are married or have partners or who have a roommate or a coworker that they share, you know, what they like with, that, you know, I can find stuff for them that they can both enjoy. And I feel like anything that someone watches, I can go down that rabbit hole. They're like, I love Formula One on Netflix. I'm like, oh, well, then if you like that, then you're going to like this, you're going to like that. And I just exposing people to great,
you're an algorithm
exposing people. Yeah. To better, to more, more interesting stories.
Totally. I just feel like, generally speaking, too, the media has lost its cultural relevance. It's in terms of like its general relevance, it's more relevant than it's ever been. It's all we do is watch shit. But again, there isn't that like one big piece of media that everybody's talking about or that captures all of our attention at the same time. And if there is, it lasts for a week, like Squid Game. Oh my God, Squid Game is amazing. Everybody's watching it. It's gone. No one gives a fuck now. Next. What's next? Yeah. And if you can't be memed, your shit doesn't matter. That really, the meme culture, I feel like, is what tells us what is important.
Okay, bringing it back to a cultural staple that is still hanging in there, The Bachelor. Are you watching?
Of course I am.
What do you think about it now? How do you think that they could last into the future? What changes would you want
to
see?
Well, one thing, and you know this is to be true because I just said it to you yesterday, I think they need to bring back the mole. I loved that. The idea that there's a contestant and you can't fully trust anybody, which heightens the game factor, that you don't know how much you should share with anybody, which makes you live at some sort of elevated state. And the idea mm-hmm. that person is giving that information to the Bachelor, who, by the way, it doesn't even matter what you tell them, because if they have any brain cells, they would speak up and say, oh God, I don't want a crazy person, but they usually don't. I would like a mole. I would like that. The Jesse Palmer thing, and I've said this before, I actually know the girl that he chose. And I said to her, I'm convinced the mole was in love with him. And she said, absolutely not. They were just great friends. But if you look back at that, and I know that you have, it's a little bit weird. So I think, I still feel
she
like...
She was the wife of his friend.
She took it a little bit too personal and serious, and I liked it for that reason. So if I were behind the scenes, I'd say, let's hire somebody who's a mole, or like get the lead and then a mole, but the mole can't be married because that's a buzzkill. I want a mole who might be
a
like
sexy mole,
like an old girlfriend or boyfriend, and they're sabotaging these girls, right? While also navigating their own personal feelings. And maybe by the end, he has like she has two last options, you know, the finalists, and then chooses the mole in the end. Like that would be great television.
And if I may add, we have a mole cam. They put a camera in a little brooch that the mole wears at all times so that we get a fisheye first person perspective shot of what she's seeing as she's going around and doing her dirty work.
They should have had a la Big Brother, you know, live cams in the Bachelorette Mansion. I don't know why they haven't done that.
Well, they did in some of the first seasons.
I think they're worried. Chad and I have discussed why they haven't had a mole, and we were like, it seems like it's for TWR for the wrong reasons.
Well,
but I agree with you. They should throw in, they need to do something. They need to spice it up.
John Collins, who is a friend of mine who has edited a lot of Bachelor episodes, said that the majority of the time they're in the Bachelor Mansion, they're talking about stupid things like lip gloss. So it's actually kind of boring, but there are people that are really obsessed with shows like Big Brother. You put the live feeds on the streaming network associated with,
yes,
and then people pay a premium price to just watch. Then you pay a couple Twitter accounts to give really salacious, info to the people following the Twitter feeds that trickles down to the memes and all of that stuff. That's going to get people more excited about the season, because the way it is now is too boring.
A live feed. I love that.
Or maybe let the audience be part of the casting process. Here are the top 60 that we're looking at. Vote. Who do you want Clayton to meet during the, limo exits? And then people are like more invested.
I think it should be like, do you ever watch The Ultimate Fighter?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they still do this. I haven't watched it in some time. But they used to do a thing where it would be X amount of dudes would show up, and then they had to do, on the day one, they had to fight each other, and the winners of those fights get to be on the show and the losers go home. I would love to see something like that. They bring 60 women to some kind of obstacle course, some kind of something, and you have to fight your way into the house.
I would also like to see a competition where I see that with the male leads competing to be the Bachelor. So they have to do an obstacle course. They have physical challenges. We have to interview see who their family is. I want to know who these people are before they're chosen, because mm-hmm. I don't like being presented with someone like, this person has walked the earth and has not been able to find their mate.
Yeah, he's so sincere. And they tell you, like, this is why we picked him. He's the most sincere bachelor ever. No, he's not.
I've always dreamed of the opportunity to be asked by somebody to pretend to be a relative so I could be a hometown date. So mm-hmm. I could just run through the questions. I think we all kind of feel that way. So if we could be part of the, you know, asking the bachelor like a series of questions, you know, the candidates, and then we get to decide who ultimately is chosen. I do like somebody plucked from obscurity. I do like a lead that's like, listen, I've been working in banking for 13 years. I've got a real nice like a retirement account set up. I don't have an STD. I don't have anything in my criminal background. I had a girlfriend for 6 years. It didn't work out because her parents are batshit crazy and she had a sister with crystal meth and I don't want to sign up for that. So I'd like to be the lead. What do you guys think? I would like that.
I agree. But I mean, this would require them to understand how to use social media to run yeah. all of this through some kind of social media platform. And you have like, here's our 10 contestants. Now we're going to get to know each of them. Little interviews with them. We yeah. get to vote. Whoever has the highest engagement. They're just never going to do it because the producers of the show are dinosaurs.
They're dinosaurs. I am constantly told by one specific network that they think podcasts are irrelevant. I'm like, okay, it's not 1965, friends. Okay. So you need to like move into the future. That's why they're getting their asses kicked in streaming networks.
Of course. It's because they're old and they are still trying to run television in a way that worked in 1980. That is dead now. But these people, in many cases, still have these very cushy jobs running the marketing for a network or for a certain series of shows or whatever. They've had that job for 20 fucking years. They're still getting paid a good salary. And I'm going to do it the way I've always done it. And it's like, well, that doesn't fucking work now.
I'm sorry. Did you all not just see what Bachelor Nation TikTok posted this week? The video of Clayton dancing with Shrek?
Yeah.
That's not old.
And that's great. Finally. But it's like, that should have been happening 3 years ago. And I think it's only by some kind of insane circumstance accident that it's happening now. Yeah, I don't think that this is like on purpose. They weren't like, we need somebody who really knows how to use TikTok. They were just like, give them the job, I guess. And then it turns out they're really smart at TikTok. They really get it, you know? They got lucky with that. But I agree with you. I think they need to like shake some shit up. At the very least, they need to shoot it differently. It should look at least as good as these other shows in the way it's presented. And Bachelor still looks like it looked in 2002.
Yeah. And the candidate still stays at the Westlake Village, right? And they all stand at the tree and look out with their cowboy boot on with a piece of hay. Like, will I ever find love ever again in this world? Yeah. The hometown dates, everything's shot exactly the same. Isn't that insane?
We're almost through the second month of this year, but that doesn't mean that you should forget about those New Year's resolutions, your new goals, especially your skincare goals. Small, easy changes in your routine can have amazing results. And your secret weapon should be Dime Beauty. I've been using this stuff. Look at me. Look at my face, pace case.
You're glowing.
How young do I look? Tell me. Tell me the number.
That's a pace case glow. You look like a little baby.
Thank you. That's the look I'm going for. And I put the stuff on at night. Dime's eye cream. And then they have a dewy day cream that I also use. And this is the result.
I've literally never used a moisturizer before. Mm-hmm. I've always had oily skin, but now it's getting to that time. And I made one of my New Year's resolutions to be to do my skincare routine. And I'm using the dewy day cream in the morning. I keep it on the left. Using the restorative night cream, I keep it on the right. It's bim, bam, boom. I know which one to use. And now my face is moisturized all the time. And it's so nice.
You look like a baby as well.
Thank you. I was waiting for it. A little slow. But this takes the guesswork out of the routine. So this is part of the work system, the two moisturizers. There's also a sold out retinol alternative, the TBT cream. I can't wait to try that one as well. Dime has over 2 million happy customers and their product reviews are literally all 5 stars.
This year, love your skin again. Go to dimebeautyco.com now and unlock your discount. That's dimebeautyco.com. Creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now,
there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in Three Body Problem. Mm. 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver 5 times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the seven-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Same?
Yes. And I mean, I get it that it's like, especially in terms of like viewing it as a sport, there is a certain format to visual presentation of all sports. But even football, even basketball, baseball, whatever, they start to alter how they present the game when new technology arises. Yeah. You got like the, you know, that there's that camera that hangs on wires over a football game now that goes over the middle of the field and shit.
Unbelievable. And you feel like you're in the middle of the field.
Exactly. Yeah. I literally just watched a basketball game the other night in virtual reality, in the metaverse. I was sitting courtside. And then I was also sitting like in the basketball hoop, basically in VR. And it's like, why isn't The Bachelor trying to do something like that? Why aren't any of these reality shows? Because that is the way we're going. At least experiment with this shit. And they just refuse to do it. Again, I think it's because it's like, there's 5 people who are like 70 years old that are like,
this is the way we've always done it.
I want to watch the live feed. I'm on the Fimpros tray.
Don't you just love that? I want to be standing next to the wall of pictures. And I remember they used to have them wear like the same dress, or at least it looked like it. I remember I interviewed Jen Schaft and she said, Kate, when I went to my after the rose ceremony, I think I wore pants. I'm like, I think she said, I think I wore khaki pants. I was like, times have changed, Tomas. I mean, wow. That is, isn't that wild?
And she got the full royale.
Imagine this is night one. This is how you view it. You put on your VR goggles and you press the button. You're now sitting in the back of a limo with 5 other players as they're cheersing with their champagne and like, oh my God, I can't wait. And one of them's dressed as a penguin or something. And you're like, well, she's fucking out. Then imagine you now are standing right near the Bachelor as each of the players is coming out of the limo, and you get to watch them walking towards you, and you get to stand 1 foot away as they're delivering their jokes or doing whatever they're doing. And now you're in the mansion and you get to see each of them walking in. Maybe you're even the bartender. And so you get to be the first person they come to ask for their drink. And you're sitting, I mean, they could easily do this. You can buy a VR camera right now on Amazon for like $50. That's all it would take to just experiment with it and put that out and see if people like it. It takes away nothing from the actual presentation of the show. You can still throw that on ABC and this can be an additional little thing.
Yeah. Or just put it on social media just to give people a little flavor. Test it out.
Take it out of your candle budget.
When will we be asked to run a television network?
Network, I don't know. Show.
Probably right after this comes out, this pod.
I think so. They're like,
yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
Within the next 48 hours, we will each be taking over a network.
Wait, Kate, I have a question. Back to your blast from the past. When did you go from the blog to the podcast? What was there something that made you?
No, just that leap? I just thought there's nobody who does a show that's just all about unscripted. I mean, Watch McCrappins did recaps of Bravo shows, but I didn't see someone with the idea of interviewing people who had been on reality shows, like current reality shows or ones of the past. Actually, my first guest 450 plus episodes ago was Ashley Iaconetti. So it was right when she had been crying all the time.
A legend.
Heard of her.
So when I interviewed her, I was like, what is the deal? Like, why are you crying so much? And it was just a great episode.
And she's like, Instagram followers, baby.
Yeah. And then she started a podcast like a year after that or something. But I think
that was Almost Famous, the Ben Higgins one.
Yeah. I think she was kind of like, what is this podcast thing? And then, you know, much like everybody, you try it out and you're like, oh, I kind of dig this. But yeah.
You were her muse.
I was the first, I know, that had the concept of like an interview show where it was all around reality television. People were confused by that. But I just always loved reality TV. And I really thought that that would be something that people would be interested in. And I was right.
Will you continue to do this podcast forever? I mean, for the rest of your mortal life?
So what I would love to do is to use this as an opportunity to move also into producing shows. And I'm working on a show right now. So I would like to continue to do that.
Nice. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Good luck with it.
How do you feel about the fact that, you know, you're now on Jean Blanc, DeMar Jackson level fame? You're a celebrity in your own right at this point.
Doesn't feel like that. But my kids would tell you no one cares about me. And I would tell you the same. So I feel like I've got a lot of work ahead of me. Like if somebody stops me and they're like, I love your show. I'm like, you listen to it? It's why I'm so interested by people on reality shows who believe themselves to be movie stars. I'm like, how, like, it's just a different wiring in their brain.
But they also, some of them get a different experience. Like, you know, we do a podcast as well, as you can tell. And it's like, we don't have a gang of agents and managers and stuff sending us like opportunities every day and telling us what we should do. Colton Underwood has like had a TV camera crew around him for pretty much 80% of every year since he was in The Bachelor, whenever that was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So like he's got this entourage of people around him telling him he's a star,
right?
Really showcasing him as one. So I think that's a whole different experience. Or even somebody like Nick Viall, who has a podcast that has producers and he's constantly doing social media and, you know, all this stuff. Caitlin Bristow.
And he has podcasts talking about him all the time for no reason.
I'm just saying some of these players come off and they do have, I think, like an apparatus around them to promote the idea that they're a star. And it has to be difficult to not think that's true if there's like multiple people telling you that it is true constantly.
Well, I think that you have to still have your feet firmly planted in planet Earth. And so you would need to check yourself all the time, you know? And if you're not doing that, then there's something wrong.
Would you let your children go on a reality TV show?
Only if I could do the hometown date episode, because I think it would be worth it for that. I do.
Oh, right. To make your dream come true. I forgot.
I would like to be in an episode with Jenny McCarthy, and we would together like to be one of the guests that's kind of giving the Bachelor contestants, like, you know, we're putting them through a series of obstacles or something. The two of us
Your
would like
group date host.
We would like to be co-hosts of one of those segments too.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
I think Lizzie and I would love to host a group date as well.
Yeah.
Never going to happen.
Oh, bummer.
Time will tell.
Time will tell. Time will tell.
Who knows?
Who knows? I agree.
But thank you so much for joining us.
Oh my God, I had a blast.
Yes.
Friends for life.
This has been an absolute pleasure, as it was to be on your show. And hopefully we can do it again sometime. But everybody should go listen to Reality Life with Kate Casey. And what else? Where else should they go? What else should they look at? What do you got?
Twitter, at Kate Casey. I tweet about shows and during shows all week long. My Instagram is at Kate Casey CA. You can get my must watch list by going to katecasey.substack.com. However, I posted on all my socials. My TikTok is It's Kate Casey. Patreon with bonus episodes at patreon.com/KateCasey. Basically, you can find me anywhere. But the episodes are 3 times a week. Tuesdays, I tell you what to watch each week. And then Wednesdays and Fridays are longer form interviews, usually 1 to 2 segments. Your episode, for example, also has the director and producer of Gaming Wall Street, which is a documentary about the GameStop scandal on HBO Max this week.
Dang. It's incredible, the volume of content that you're putting out.
Yeah, it I just interviewed this morning amazing. Rory Kennedy, who's the director of the Boeing documentary on Netflix, which is also really good.
Man, that's cool.
Nice.
Well, we'll have to check all that stuff out. But thanks again for joining us.
And I'm excited for your show you're producing.
Oh, I'm excited too.
Can't wait to see it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Kate Casey for joining us in the pit for this fascinating discussion and for being Clues' new bestie. I'm so excited to watch this dynamic duo unfold.
As am I. Can't thank you enough, Kate Casey, for joining us. And we are on Kate Casey's podcast this week as well, Reality Life. Be sure to go check that out wherever you get your podcasts. And a bit of scheduling to remind you of, next week, there will also be no Twibbon, because we have two episodes of our beloved game. Monday night, we are going to have Fantasy Suites. We will then have our recap out for you Tuesday, the big game breakdown of what is basically the penultimate round of the game. I can't wait to see this. And then Tuesday, they are going to air The Women Tell All, and we will have our breakdown of The Women Tell All out for you on Friday in place of what would have been Twibbon. So next week is going to be all gameplay breakdown. I can't wait to dig into it. And from what we've already learned about what happens at The Women Tell All, there's going to be some spicy stuff, unless they cut it all out.
I mean, it's two huge episodes in 1 week. Yeah, exactly. It's going to be the blandest. I mean, I can't wait to watch both of these episodes. I think that they both deserve their own episode breakdown by Game of Roses. So
I completely agree.
For the Gaines, the Twibbon fans out there, we'll be back. Don't worry.
And Monday, we will have a new Digging Deeper out for you. If you're down at the bottom of the pit with us on Patreon, you're not going to want to miss it. We have some insane clips already lined up. I don't even want to say what they are. They're just going to be a great little surprise for anyone who happens to listen on Monday. So again, join us at patreon.com/GameOfRoses. And don't forget to mark your calendars. If you're in Los Angeles, April 2nd, Pace Case and I will be at Skylight Books. In, what is it in? Silver Lake?
Los Feliz. It's on Vermont Avenue. Skylightbooks.com, I think, was the website. But we'll be there. What, do you remember what time? None of this is committed to memory.
I think it's 3 p.m.
I don't know. I think 3 sounds right. We'll get you further confirmation as this month progresses on the time. But that will be our first authorized book signing. Hopefully a little less drama filled and a little more filled with more books.
I have all the pertinent information. It is okay, skylightbooks.com. It is 1818 North Vermont Avenue, Los Angeles, California, 90027. And we will be there at 3 p.m. on April 2nd.
Yes. So come join us. Bring whatever you want us to sign, your book, sauce, your face. Will we sign faces?
Did you say you face?
Your face?
Bring you face. We will sign you face. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
I love being a celebrity.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us this week. We hope you have a great weekend. And before we go, as always, what is that Dwob at?
It has been 7,284 days without an Asian bachelor. Praise be our beloved game.
Please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then